work really hard to make the right call. So it's super challenging on our end. Obviously, it's going to be frustrating to have a game in like that. A pretty high-quality hitter at the plate that can climb back into that count. It's no guarantee of success at the end of the at-bat. It's just a tough way to end it. There's no need to, you know, be angry about that. I just think it's just a disappointing way to end.
I mean, Gabe Kapler better than me. Hell, I was angry. I didn't even have a dog in the fight. I was angry. That was an incredible game between two incredible teams, two 109-win teams, two bitter arch rivals. Incredible game that came down to an incredibly cruel ending. The check swing heard around the world. Max Scherzer striking out Wilmer Flores in controversial fashion. Look, I understand that Flores at that point was, I believe, 0-for-17 lifetime against Max Scherzer. And here, by the way, is first base umpire Gabe Morales saying that check swings are one of the hardest calls we have. I don't have the benefit of multiple camera angles when I'm watching it live. When it happened live, I thought he went, so that's why I called it a swing. Yeah, obviously, unless you were just ready to go home, because so he called it with authority.
He got it wrong.
Morales. He called it with authority. He went here, and he just kept it moving. Like, all right, we gone. I got a plane to catch. I mean, it was no hesitation, which that's the job. It was not even close to going around. It was clearly a check swing. And like I was saying, I don't care if Wilmer Flores was 0-for-17 lifetime against Max Scherzer. Anything could happen on the next pitch. It was a man on first. That's not the way that game should have ended. Not only did the Giants deserve better, baseball deserved better, we deserve better. I'm still pissed. I didn't sleep well last night. There's no telling what could have happened had that been called the right way, which was a ball.
Let me just say this to you, doctor. Do the right thing. That's it? That's it. Do the right thing. I just got to give a shout out to the t-shirt. Great t-shirt. Look, hey, man. You could argue, even though that was not the right call, let's just say it. He got it wrong. The umpire got it wrong.
No argument.
No way, no how was that a check swing. Just period. He got it wrong.
Yeah.
But isn't it poetic that these teams, these rivals, went back and forth all season long? I kept waiting for the Dodgers to overtake them, and it never really happened. They never – the Giants never wilted. I waited for them to wilt. I kept looking at them saying, how is this happening? They're not as good as the Dodgers. They're a good team, but they're not that good. And when the team that wilted in the NL West was not the Giants, it was the Padres. But the Giants kept going, win the division by one game. Isn't it poetic that the season series comes down to 12 games to 12 games, that they both have well over 100 wins, and in the ninth inning of the deciding game, it wasn't really a run, a statement run that decided it, even though it was a check swing. That's really the difference between the Dodgers and the Giants, is really a disputed check swing. And I know that doesn't feel good. That in 25 cents to get you a cup of Red Bay coffee in the Bay Area. Shout out, black owned business.
Hold on, that's interesting. I didn't know that's where you were going with that. So you're saying it's poetic, not painful.
Yeah.
But poetic,
not painful,
that it ends
poetic
on a check swing.
Huh. A check swing. Huh. This is what, you want a difference? The difference between the Dodgers and Giants is, you know what I mean? Just a glimpse, just a little bit.
I mean, I see what you, okay.
I know it was the wrong call.
That's an interesting column.
I know.
That's an interesting column.
But
that's an interesting column for the next morning for me to read in the San Francisco Chronicle.
Here it is. Sporting, shout out Sporting Green, shout out. You know, it would have been, just imagine if it had been, okay, here we go. He strikes out swinging, or it's a pop-up and the game is over. No, it left you with this, what? I'm not sure.
some uncertainty.
Which is really what their whole season, their season-long slog was like that.
Right.
Who's going to win this? Like, Dodgers win it, right?
Right. Nothing was really determined as to who was the better team. I mean, I'm sorry. 2-1 was plenty for me. A one-run game. I'll beat you here. It's poetic that it came down to a one-run game that was decided in the bottom of the ninth, of course. That's poetic enough for me. I don't need a first-base umpire making a clearly poor call that everybody saw in real time that he didn't go around. And it wasn't like, oh, well, this isn't close. Check swing close call. I get it. But this isn't close.
Yeah.
Everybody that saw it, from the booth to the couch, everybody was like, oh, hell no, he didn't go around. And again, it's Max Scherzer. It's Wilmer Flores. He's owned him. It probably would have, as Gabe Kapler alluded to, it probably would have ended the same way. But you can't say that definitively, not in this sport, not in sports in general. Anything could have happened. Hell, an error put a man on first base to begin with.
You know what?
That leaves a bitter taste in my mouth.
You know what the baseball version of the instigator is? The baseball version of, oh, man, he said something about your mama, dog. Or, hey, don't let him step on your
brand new Jordans.
He go step on your shoes. You going to take that? You going to sit there? Here's the baseball version of that. The catcher going.
The appeal to first base?
Hey, ain't got nothing to do with you. Shut up. Sit there. As the umpire, let me do it. So he pretty much took it there because everybody else, if he hadn't done that, I'm telling you, if he hadn't done that, okay, here it is. That's a ball. We're still going. But the catcher quickly goes. And the umpire says,
he did his job.
Oh, everybody's looking at me.
He did his job.
Man.
I mean, I
know
I
he
wish
did.
In some alternate universe, check swings could be reviewable. You know, I get why they're not.
Isn't that what he's saying? Essentially, he's making an argument for that. It's like, hey, I don't have the benefit of multiple camera angles. Well, hey, imagine in the 21st century, in the year 2021, we can fix that for you. You know, we can make this thing reviewable in an instant. And then you can go back and say, hey, let me look at this again. The bottom line is, Mike.
Like I said, I get why they're
not.
You
really got it wrong.
Because reviews have to stop somewhere, though, right? I mean, we can't have everything reviewable in baseball. Okay. All right.
No, anything. Seventh inning on, I want everything on the table. Seventh inning on, the game gets more important,
really?
I want you to be able to review everything. Yes, I do.
Balls
within
and strikes.
Reason. Not balls and strikes, but within reason.
Within reason.
Within reason. All right. So, all that being said, come on. It was only my man was down 0-2. He's facing Max Scherzer, who is bringing the heat. Okay, I can't say definitively. I can't say 100% he would have gotten out. I can tell you that I have a 95%. I can go 95%. I'm 95% sure he was going to make an out. And I'm 99.9% sure that the Dodgers were going to win that game any old way. How about the Dodgers? Shame on all y'all around the country focusing on a check swing. How about the LA Dodgers, the team of the century, the team of the 21st century, the wild card.
Yes. Okay. All right. I'm with you on that part.
The wild card who has 106 wins. Has forced to play in a one-game playoff, wins that in dramatic fashion, has to go on the road, take on a 107-win Giants, goes down in the series, comes back and wins two straight games against the best team record-wise in baseball, and does it once again. This is why you pay for elite talent. Look at Michael Smith's shirt. Mike, go ahead. Go ahead and floss that thing. For those who don't know,
I told you I have a shirt for every occasion. That's for Mr. 4-for-4 with a stolen base and a run scored last night. That's what that's for.
This is why you pay. Look, my man Tariq Trotter, in an epic freestyle, said, just because they give you ish don't mean you got to take it. I paraphrase that. But that's what the Red Sox, now it's relative, it's all relative. The Red Sox kept telling Mookie Betts, hey, it's a tough market out there. You know, take this offer we got for you. Give us a, you know, take this offer. He wouldn't do it. Wouldn't do it. I'll take my chances. I'll go to the market. Hey, they're not going to pay baseball players like they used to. I'll take my chances. And Mookie Betts on the biggest stage always delivers. He delivers defensively, delivers on the bases, and at the plate. So the LA Dodgers are where they're supposed to be. And unfortunately, I hate to be this crass. Hate to be this crass. The San Francisco Giants are where they're supposed to be today, too. I know.
Where they're supposed to be, it certainly feels that way. This is the Dodgers' sixth LCS in the past. No, I'm talking about the Dodgers. The Dodgers' sixth LCS in the past nine seasons. Michael, that's more than 13 MLB teams have ever played in. So, yeah, if you're a member of the Dodgers, a Dodgers fan, as you are, from across the country, then absolutely, feel right at home in another LCS. You did have a dog in this fight. Everybody knows you were pulling for the Dodgers, mainly because of Mookie Betts, but that's your squad. So you've disqualified yourself from having an objective conversation about this. Michael, I don't care.
Nobody's objective.
Who?
Nobody's objective.
No. You could be objective about this.
Objectivity doesn't exist. Stop.
Michael, I don't care. I don't care if Bob Gibson was on the mound last night. I don't care if Satchel Paige was on the mound last night. I don't care if Pedro Martinez, and I'm talking 1999-2000 Pedro Martinez was on the mound last night. You cannot say with any level of certainty. I know that he was 0-17. I know that he was 0-17 against Max Scherzer, who's about to win a fourth Cy Young. But Michael, anything could have happened. If he puts the ball in play, anything could have happened. And you're not going to tell me that the Dodgers were always going to win and supposed to beat another 109-win team that was legitimate. Okay. See, what you're saying, Michael, is that the Giants are a cute little story. This is what Jessica Mendoza was talking about the other day. They were a cute little story that had their time, but now the Dodgers.
That's what you're trying to say,
and I don't like that. This should not come down to a freaking check swing. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Talking about a check swing ain't what it's about. No, that's not how the game should end.
But this is what the game is. Okay, you're good. You're really good at math, right? You're good at math? You've always been good at math, right? I can tell. You're that type.
Okay.
I can see it. No? Okay.
I like math.
All right.
I was told there would be no math.
Wait a minute.
What does that mean? You're that type.
Baseball.
What does that mean? Wait, hold on. Like you don't look just as nerdy as I do. Like, you're not as much of a geek as I am. You're like math. You look like that type. What the hell was that? What was that?
Hey, what's wrong with being called smart?
What is a type?
What's being called smart? It's a compliment. I don't have time to unpack it. No. It's a compliment.
No.
Why are you taking it that way?
What is the type of person that likes math?
What's going on?
What's wrong with math?
Nothing wrong with math.
I mean, hell, we invented math.
Ain't nothing wrong.
Black people invented math. So what are you talking about?
Take it back. Fertile Crescent. Let's go.
Anyway,
look.
What were you about to say?
I'm about to say this. Baseball is all about the stats. It's all about the numbers. It's all about math. I can't say with certainty, but just like it's not as absolute as a well-constructed math problem, but you've already identified some real big math issues that the San Francisco Giants had last night. The number one math problem, they were down by one with one out to go. They were down to their 26th out. They're trailing 2-1. They're down to their final strike. They've got Max Scherzer on the mound.
Yep.
That's a math problem. Yep. Another math problem is the man who was facing Max Scherzer. Another math problem, now this is a little beyond anything to the outfield. You go across left to right, right to left, center right, center left. Everybody got a pretty good arm in the outfield. So there weren't really many paths to a successful appearance there at that point in the game. And that's why, let me say this too. I know I've been a little disrespectful to the San Francisco Giants. They'll take it that way, but I'm coming from a good place. That's why I love what Gabe Kapler said. Gabe Kapler, a guy I've always had wonderful conversations with. Former Red Sox dude. Good dude. Good dude. He handled it well because he's being realistic. He's being realistic. He has to say he could have climbed out of that. He could have climbed out of that 0-2 hole and done something good. But he's also a good baseball man. Said, look, this is not the time to be talking about this right now. The real story is that it was an epic series. It was a great series. And we knew it was going to go the distance. It was either going to be Dodgers in five or Giants in
five. Kepler
personally,
can't
I thought it was gonna be that.
Kepler can't complain. He was classy and took the high road. That isn't the same as being realistic. And no, the games or series never come down to one play. That's factual. That's true. But if he gets up there and comes off like a sore loser, then he's going to get criticized today. And he's just not wired that way to begin with, to your point.
He should be a sore loser today. He should be a sore loser today.
I don't think he was being realistic. I think he was making peace with the fact that, hey, there's nothing I could do about it. Me bitching and complaining about it is not going to change it. Before we move on and go to break, I do want to do this quickly because we spent a lot of time on the NLDS. And we talked a lot about do the right thing, a lot of do the right thing references. The Astros and Red Sox did the wrong thing quite a bit a couple of years ago. And now they meet again in the playoffs. It's been called the sign-stealing scandal series. Fifth straight ALCS.
We can do better. We can do better than that, by the way. Can't we do better?
I'm just setting the table. I'm setting the table.
It's too clunky.
But go ahead. Fifth straight ALCS for the Houston Astros. Like it or not, they're back. We ain't going nowhere. I mean, they're back. And the Red Sox, as you know, Michael, they got this worst to first thing down pat. All right.
They do.
I'm curious because I feel like, speaking of your fandom, I feel like you have rooted for the Astros. You hate, I mean, I'm just trying to get your baseball fandom because you know you're all over the place when it comes to who you root for. You hate the Rays.
Yeah.
But I feel like you were rooting for the Astros last year, but Boston's your backyard. So we got plenty of time to talk more about this series. So with the time we have left in this block, how do you see this series and who you're pulling for between these two cheaters? I mean, I'm sorry, between these two fine model franchises.
Call them cheaters. Call them cheaters because they both cheated. No question. But no, my issue with the Astros, and you saw a glimpse of it in a text chain we had going with Chris Sims yesterday into last night. So he was saying some crazy stuff last night, different sport, just crazy. I don't even know. You know, I can't bring him up. If I bring this up on the air, you're like, his football credibility may go down. Like,
He's not here to defend himself. Don't bring it. Yeah, he's not here to defend himself.
And he can't, even if he were, he wouldn't be able to defend it. But earlier in the day, he's talking about, hey, enjoy the Red Sox. You know, they cheat and all that stuff. And I said, yeah, I'll enjoy the cheating Red Sox. They have cheated. They've been reprimanded for it. And I said, yeah, you know, as the Yankees, I said, you know who else thinks the Red Sox cheated? Innocent Yankees like Andy Pettit and A-Rod and Roger Clemens. Get the irony. Yes. Okay. They're cheaters too. So my whole issue with the Astros.
The history of baseball.
Yeah, my Astros scandal. It's people acted like it had never happened before, or this cheating is worse than that cheating. I didn't like the picking and choosing at the cheating buffet line.
They took it kind of far.
So that's what that was.
They took it kind of far.
But I'll say this, Mike, quickly. The one thing I don't like about the Astros, now the Astros players, is the anger that they display when people bring up the cheating. Now, let me just put this out. Let's just consider this. Alex Cora was banned from baseball for a year, lost a year's salary. I don't think the Red Sox would have hired him back and said, hey, man, let me double your salary, make up for that year you lost. No, that money's gone, never coming back. Carlos Beltran was set to be the manager of the Mets. He was fired because of his connection to the Astros. Jeff Luhnow, their former general manager, fired, no longer back in baseball. A.J. Hinch, fired a year out of baseball, now back in the game. They're all held accountable. They all have a stain. The Astros players didn't lose a dime.
The players? Nope.
The players didn't lose a dime. Nope. So I'm asking
under
y'all.
The guise of immunity.
What you angry about, player? What you angry about?
They all got off.
You cheated. You told baseball you cheated. You said he made me. It was the devil. The devil made me do it. It was Alex Cora. Alex Cora not only came up with the cheating scandal, but he's responsible for everything that that is broken in the state of Texas. Alex Cora created that too. They blamed it on somebody else. Never took accountability. Now they're mad at the world. So I'm rooting against him.
Oh,
how does that make sense?
Okay, so you're back against the. Okay, good. So okay. So at one point you loved. Yeah. You loved it last year when they were real defiant. You loved the Carlos Correa press conferences. You loved them clapping back, but it's gotten old. Okay, cool. Just keep it track. Well, if you're with the Red Sox, that means I got to go with the Astros then, all right, because we have to stay on brand. So I need to
just rooting against me.
I know what you really want. Gary, roll the music so we can go ahead and wrap this up. I know what you really want.
What do I want?
You really just want to see. You want to see Dodgers Red Sox. You want to see Dodgers Red Sox? If it's Dodgers Red Sox, I take it you're taking vacation and you're gonna be front row at Fenway. You're gonna be behind home plate at Fenway. I'm imagining.
I'm not taking vacation. I'm taking that shirt.
You like you? And I'm gonna wear really it. Like, you really like this one, huh? You really like this one?
I love that movie.
Hey,
I love that movie.
You know what?
It's just great.
Hey, you know
so
what?
Many levels.
Hey, Mike, it's yours. This was yours. That's a large. This one is yours. It's clean. I'm clean.
I can't.
You know, I'll wash it up for you.
I know
this is yours.
I need a small, though. I need a small.
Ain't no damn small. Hey,
I'm a small.
Stop lying. Remember, lying for God strike
you
down.
How much you weigh?
Remember when we was kids?
How much
God
you weigh?
Strike you down.
You probably outweigh me.
Don't worry about what I be doing. Don't worry about what I be doing. We're talking about you.
You probably outweigh me by
you said you were small.
35 pounds.
You at least a medium.
You got 35 pounds.
You at least a medium.
35 pounds.
You know, definitely want Kyrie to be around. I wish none of this stuff would happen, but you know, this is the situation that we're in. And you know, Kyrie made his decision on what he wanted to do. He chose to do what he wanted to do, and the team did the same. And you know, this is on me to just focus on me and do my job. You know, and I let those two parties handle that situation. So you know, I want our whole team together. I want us to be at full strength, but. Sometimes it don't work out that way, but I'm still positive that things will work out in the best for both parties. This is not the ideal situation coming into the season, but you know, some of this out of our control. So what we can do is come in and focus on our jobs every single day. And what is Ben Mag going to do? We're not going to change his mind. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, we'll let him figure out what he needs to do and the team figure out, you know, what they need to do. And us as players, when we in the locker room, we on the floor, we're going to work with each other. So, you know, life is amazing. So I can't be too mad at somebody making a decision for themselves. You know, that's who am I to get upset at that, you know? So just focus on what we got in this locker room. And when Kai's ready, I'm sure he'll talk to Joe and Sean and they'll figure that out and they'll tell us. So until then, we're going to keep grinding.
That's good stuff right
there.
Oh,
Mike, the leadership.
That's good.
The leadership.
That's good.
Of Kevin Durant. He says he's not mad, just trying to handle his business. And parenthetically, let me just add that I always, any opportunity I get to bring this up by Kevin Durant, I always tell people, if somebody didn't know about the NBA and they said, you know, tell me like 10 reasons why you love the NBA, 10 reasons, number 9 or number 10, maybe even higher, would be Kevin Durant's You the Real MVP press conference. Not just because of what he said to his mom, but I just want to point out, as you are, Mike, you're a boss. And as you are talking to your staff, note that Kevin Durant addressed everybody in that MVP press conference. He addressed everybody. He addressed coaches. He addressed the 12th man, the 11th man, the 10th man, everybody, the fans, everybody. And he had a word. He really had a word for him. So that's still one of my favorite inspirational, motivational speeches. Now, in this situation with Brooklyn.
Parenthetical.
Yeah, I was gonna say parenthetical. Like, man, where's the other one? I see part one.
Just don't even worry about the parentheses. Just say, you know, I mean, that's bad punctuation if you ask me, dog. Like, if I was your copy editor, I'd be like, just do a whole different paragraph. Or how about this? How about you write a sidebar? Okay, I mean, that was a 3-minute parenthetical. But nonetheless, go ahead, bro.
Do you. Anyway, hey, listen, you just gotta, you know, it's a different style. my usual style will confuse you a while. But in this case, I think he is not being positive just in a sunny way. I think he knows something. I think he knows that this is a season right now for Kyrie Irving, and this season may last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. I don't believe that Kevin Durant has made up his mind that we may have to go this entire road without Kyrie Irving. That Kevin Durant has decided that Kyrie Irving won't be there. I don't think he's I don't think he's thinking we're not going to have Kyrie all year. I think he knows Kyrie's going to be there at some point, which is going to be really interesting for you all, you people, people like you. Big time. Is that your lawn people outside, by the way? Big time Brooklyn, your big time Brooklyn fans who were all about the big three last year. And now that Kyrie has done something to disappoint you, now all y'all turning on him. I think that's just really interesting.
Wait.
I can't wait to see.
That's how rumors get. Don't pay me with that. So wait, ain't nobody turning on Kyrie, okay?
But what?
It's simply simply recognition. So a couple of things. I agree with your larger point, which I'll say it a little bit differently from Kyrie's standpoint, because you're saying that Durant has not just made peace with, or he's not resigned to the fact that he's not going to have Kyrie Irving all year long, right? He may know something, or may have an indication, or maybe he doesn't. Yeah. I don't think he does, and I don't think he cares. You're saying that he knows something. I'm saying he's been through some stuff. Like, Kevin Durant has been around long enough not to overreact to the way things are right now. He's missed a season. He's gotten hurt in the finals. He's lost when he's led a series. He's been to the mountaintop. He's been around the block. He's been there, done that, and got the T-shirt large to know that it's like, you know what, man? Kyrie Irving at any point could change his mind and get vaccinated, and nobody would blame him. Now, this is my commentary. Nobody would blame Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is already a martyr to people who think like him. Kyrie Irving is already being worshipped in a lot of corners. Okay, so he's made his point. He's made his point already. So in the event that in the event that he reverses field and decides to get vaccinated in order to be there for his team, I don't think anybody would begrudge him. I don't think anybody, and maybe I'm being naive because somebody always gonna have some shit to say. I'm saying I don't think people are gonna say to him, hey, You a sellout. What happened to being a voice for the voiceless? What happened to, you know, not being forced into doing something you don't want to do or putting something in? What happened to my body, my choice? What happened to not conforming? What happened to being a wolf and not being a sheep? To protect the sheep, you got to kill the wolf. You listening, but you ain't hear me, right? Like, what happened to all that, Kyrie? I don't think anybody's going to say that to him. I think people are going to realize Kyrie Irving has a lot on the line, not just in terms of his salary, but in terms of his career, which is finite, and in terms of his opportunity to win a championship. To your point about people turning on Kyrie Irving, nobody's turning on Kyrie Irving. All people like me are saying is that we recognize that even without Kyrie Irving, the Nets are quite formidable. That's it. That's not turning on him. That's just moving forward. That's just moving on.
Yeah, okay, they are. Even without Kyrie Irving, the Nets are a top three team in the Eastern Conference. With Kyrie Irving, I can say, they're the number one team in the East. They have to be recognized as the biggest threat in the East, with all respect to my Milwaukee Bucks. So there's a difference. And I take exception with the, hey, they'll be fine. Yeah, they will be fine without Kyrie. But they're not
better than fine.
Championship. They're not rubber stamp championship NBA finals. Fine.
Why not?
No, they're not that. They're not that. Not without them. I'll tell you one thing that makes me nervous, though, about my whole take on Kevin Durant. One thing makes me nervous. He said, and maybe it's just a little thing. I don't know the nature of their relationship. I would think they talk more often than every couple of days, but Durant said he hadn't talked to Kyrie.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hadn't talked to Kyrie in a couple days. That's a little concerning. That's a little concerning to me, because I would think if Kyrie's going to come out and say all these things about his situation, that he would just kind of run it by Kevin, not for approval. He's going to say what he wants to say, but just to keep Kevin Durant in the loop.
Maybe they've already talked, and there's nothing else to talk about. Like, I mean, how many times you got to have the same conversation? Like, if you're Kyrie Irving, you know, you don't need, like you just said, you don't need to keep consulting somebody on your personal decision. And if you're Kevin Durant, I mean, this is a very mature relationship, if you ask me. Not just leadership, which you recognize off top, but a very mature relationship and an actual friendship. Now, a professional respect as well as an actual friendship for Kevin Durant to sit up here and say, A, I'm not mad. What good is that going to do? B, let him figure out what he got to figure out. That's his business. You know, I'm going to do me. He's going to do him. I don't have to hound him or guilt trip him or peer pressure him or nothing like that. Like, he's going to do what he's going to do. I know him well enough to know to give him his space. If he needs to talk to me, I'm a phone call away. So that doesn't concern me. If anything, it encourages me about the maturity,
you know what,
on display between these friends.
And because of their friendship, they probably wouldn't do this, because this seems to be a little, this is too opportunistic. But you know what a great boardroom would be? A great boardroom would be Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in conversation.
Eventually it will be. They'll do it eventually. They just did it with Draymond Green on Draymond's deal. They did the podcast before last season with Kyrie. Of course they're going to do an episode about this at some point. They'll do an episode.
But I would say right now, because what I want to know, and the reason I mentioned a boardroom, because I know he's not going to talk with, you know, so-called mainstream corporate media, whatever you want to call it. Even the boardroom is corporate media too. Everything is. I told you the other day, I think it's always better when people have these multi-layered analyses, these multi-layered commentaries, and they just kind of monologue it. I think it's better when somebody's asking them questions and kind of teasing it out and pushing back, sometimes violently, sometimes mildly, just to get to a clear place. And I think he would be open to that from Kevin Durant, because the one thing I want somebody he respects, to ask him this. Mm-mm. What do you need more answers on? So he's already mentioned, Kyrie has, he's already mentioned, we're not doing this, I'm not doing it, trust me. He's already mentioned doctors and nurses. He's already mentioned
I'll summarize this quickly. He's got answers at his fingertips.
Can He's got I make the best people in the you? World available if you to don't him mind, can I, to I, answer questions.
Allow me. That's not what it's about. Ain't about information. Ain't about science. Ain't about uncertainty. It's about, I don't want to be told what to do. I'm Kyrie Irving. I'm the contrarian. I'm not going to be told what to do. That's it. That's the end of it. There's nothing Kevin Durant or anybody else, Fauci, me, you, there's nothing anybody can say to Kyrie Irving unless and until Kyrie Irving decides that he's sick of missing money and he's sick of missing basketball. That's it. Speaking of sick of missing money, speaking of missing basketball.
Hold on. Before we get there, hold on. Okay, let me ask you a question. What? No, I'm not doing this.
What?
No.
Okay.
It is.
All right. What?
It's a tiny sidebar. How do you think, because that sounds like somebody who's uncoachable. I mean, that's the definition of uncoachable, right? How do you think he became, do you think he would be a better basketball player if he had a different mentality? Like, he's an amazing player. And that, what you just said, speaks to somebody who's uncoachable. How does somebody that good, you know what I mean?
Uncompromising. Can I replace that word? I'll say uncompromising.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to matters that he believes to be matters of principle. Uncompromising. I don't think you get this far. As gifted as he is, you don't get this far being uncoachable. But he's hard-headed. And he's a savant. He believes himself to be a savant. He believes himself to be a genius.
Which means
Renaissance
probably not.
Man. and more Which enlightened than the rest of us. Can we move on? Because he's not playing. So I would love to answer that question.
Move on.
But I don't want to
move on
any further because he's not
move
playing.
On.
The hey, Friday. Hey, today's Friday.
Yeah. Mike. Let me
you
check.
You looking for one? You looking for one? Are you out of them too? You out of yours too?
I'm out.
That's my guy. Okay. Ben Simmons was tired of missing checks. All right. He showed up going through the COVID protocol. Today's the day that he could join the team. You've been saying that it's going to be not for long. It's the NBA, but you're saying NFL, not for long. Right. Shams dropped a bit of news about this whole situation as Ben Simmons has rejoined the team and where trade talks or trade desires stand from both sides.
Yeah, so I'm told he is in market, and listen, the Sixers would love to get him back on the floor, but I'm told there really isn't any change as far as where he stands mentally. You know, I think he's wanted a trade. I think mentally that hasn't changed, and so it's still not clear where he stands with the organization. He's met with Doc Rivers, Daryl Morey, Elton Brand. You know, I've been told some of those meetings have gone pretty short. You know, the organization probably feels like it's gone well. So you have two different sides to this, and I think rival teams still believe he will be moved. It's just a matter of time. And one player that Philadelphia has monitored throughout the last few months, and I think it will continue and the ball will continue to be rolled, is Damian Lillard with Portland. I think there's going to be a light going into this upcoming NBA season on the future of Damian Lillard. And if Portland gets off to a rough start, like I'll tell you guys this, if they're not improved under Chauncey Billups this year, they risk losing Damian Lillard long term.
So a couple of things real quick. And Shams is the best of the best. And he's been on the show. We love his work. We appreciate all his fine reporting. But like, you know,
always.
Everybody and their mama monitoring the Dame Lillard situation. Okay. I think right now people on the outside are more concerned about Dame Lillard's status and whether or not things falter in Portland than Dame Lillard actually is. Because what I understand about Dame Lillard, I'm no NBA insider, but once he's in, he's in. Like, he's not sitting there. He doesn't have, like, he's 10 toes down, as they say. He ain't sitting up there with, like, dipping his toe and being like, let me see how we get off to the first couple of games. And then I'll decide whether or not I don't want to be traded. And furthermore, and I said this from the beginning, and you hear more and more people saying it now, this pipe dream that Daryl Morey and the Sixers seem to have, that somehow, some way, it's just going to be automatic that if and when Dame Lillard is ready to be moved from Portland, that the Blazers, A, are going to want Ben Simmons in return, and B, that Lillard is going to want to go to Philadelphia. Same thing goes for Bradley Beal. They're being mighty presumptuous and, frankly, overvaluing a player who they know is flawed. They know they're better with him than without him. But Simmons knows this, you know this, I know this, everybody knows this. The moment Daryl Morey sees a better alternative, an alternative that improves the team, he is pulling the trigger on a Ben Simmons trade. But I got news for you. Yeah. What makes you think it's automatically going to be Damian Lillard? Portland, if they decide to move Lillard, because he's not a free agent, if they decide to move Lillard, they're not going to have any shortage of suitors. They're going to have plenty of options, probably better
They'll
than
have
Ben
plenty
Simmons.
Of options. Yeah, I don't know, because they're going to want somebody who is, they're going to want somebody, that team is going to want to know that Lillard is committed to them. So it's not like a lot of teams could come up and say, I'm sure Sacramento, Minnesota, all these teams could come up with really good packages, but does he want to play there? So you really, the pool is probably limited realistically to like 5 or 6 teams. Realistically.
Sure.
That he would want to go.
But it can't be just, but it's not an automatic that he's got a one-way ticket to Portland, to Philadelphia from Portland if he's checked out.
I know. But yeah, you know, but there are not many teams can offer a guy like, I know you don't want to hear it, a guy with the skill set and the pedigree of Ben Simmons. Not a lot of teams can offer that.
But Michael, you're right about
this. Or are willing to.
But here's the problem with that. All right. We keep talking about the skill set. And the pedigree. See, this number one pick, this hype, and he's been really good in the NBA. I'll go from good to really good.
Yes, he has.
Sorry, Mark Spears, I ain't going great. Yeah. He's been really good in the NBA.
Won't go great.
He's an excellent defender.
Really good player.
Okay? He has averaged numbers in terms of rebounding, passing, and scoring that few have to start their careers the way that he has. Okay? So I get that he's talented, But there was another disturbing story. And, I don't believe everything you read and this, that, and the other. There was another disturbing story that came out today. Ramona Shelburne reported that before Game 7, before he infamously passed up a dunk, okay?
A dunk.
He was exaggerating.
Had a dude on his hip.
Yeah. He was exaggerating about potential exposure to coronavirus. Now, whether that's true or not, the fact that, again, reportedly, teammates believed that he was exaggerating, that he was ducking Game 7 pressure before Game 7 even got there. And remember, he was struggling throughout the entire series, if not the playoffs. We keep focusing on Game 7. Game 7 was not an aberration. That was not an out-of-body experience for Ben Simmons. That's who he is. And so all I'm saying is, Michael, for all his talent, all his gifts, if somebody is saying, we want to trade for Ben Simmons for him to be our franchise player, based on what I've seen so far, I think you're probably setting yourself up for disappointment.
Okay, well, let me ask you.
If you're trying to win, that is.
I don't know if that story is true or not, but let's say that story is
no,
true.
No, I don't
if
either.
If that story is true.
It sounds plausible.
If that story is true, why do they want him back? If you know that happened with Ben Simmons, shame on you.
I've been saying that from day one.
For not. You've been on this whole thing. I know you have. I know. If you think that story is true, if you think this guy is going to fake being sick because he doesn't want the pressure and the responsibility of a Game 7, you get him on the fastest and nearest thing smoking and get him out of Philadelphia. You have to.
Thank you.
Before it becomes
what
ugly.
What have I been saying?
Because what happens...
Who have I been blaming this whole time? Daryl Morey.
If that's true, well, they're getting what they deserve, which is a cool trademark, or cooler than they want. I don't think trademark is cool. It's just not what they want. They got offers. They just turn their nose up at them. We can do better.
Listen,
this is three star.
I know you joke.
We expect a five star.
You joke that I'm personally attacking Ben Simmons. That's not what I'm doing. I actually hope he turns this around. I would love to eat my words on Ben Simmons. I would love for an amazing redemption comeback story in Philadelphia. I would love to see that happen. I really would. I'm not rooting for him to fail. I'm not rooting for him to have the yips, you know, to have that much talent not be realized to its fullest potential. I'm not rooting for that. No, that wasn't a shot. I'm serious. No, I mean, he needs.
I know. It's just funny.
He needs a sports psychologist. He needs a shooting coach. Like, something's wrong. Something's missing there for all his talent. And I'm not falling over myself to trade for that if I'm Portland or anybody else. Charles Robinson coming back.
Goodness, Mike. Jeff Pasch, top lawyer, the NFL. Great relationship with Bruce Allen. And I know... of the former president of the Washington football team. They are in conversation many times about a number of league issues, including one that was really, really problematic, where the Washington football team was supposed to be fined, Mike and Charles Robinson, supposed to be fined $15,000. Bruce Allen writes to Pasch and protests. Pasch says, don't worry, you ain't got no problems, Jules. We're all good. That has been rescinded. That was supposed to be out. We've got it taken care of. No explanation. So it's just that this little cozy, as you put it, Mike, and that was the right word, cozy relationship between the former president of the Washington football team and the top lawyer of the NFL, Charles Robinson. I feel like there's so much good stuff here. I feel like the real NFL is inside those 650,000 emails. Start off, just tell us how you feel about Jeff Pasch and where he stands today.
Well, that relationship between Jeff Pasch and Bruce Allen, as you said, the fine being what appeared to be unilaterally Jeff Pasch just saying, don't worry about it, it's rescinded, is really crazy. I think some of the remarks that they made about, he made a joke about, the drawing in Latino fans and what might not be so popular once the wall's built. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're just, I don't even know really how to describe. Here's why I think this is even more troubling than John Gruden. Jeff Pasch is the league's lead lawyer, okay? And he has been for a long time. There are few positions in the NFL more powerful than the general counsel of the NFL, okay? And because that is someone who touches, literally, he's the choke point between everything that happens with the league and then the teams and players. I mean, he is the tip of the sword legally for the NFL. That means investigations go through him. That means player fines, you know, end up going through him. That means negotiations with the union go through him. He is Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell is Jeff Pasch. I mean, Roger Goodell is the face. He's the guy that's out there. He can set the agenda. But ultimately, Jeff Pasch is the lawyer who sifts out what can or can't happen. And to see this kind of a personal relationship with a team executive and the things that they spoke about, and he's a lawyer, and yet he puts this in his emails. Not only do I want to see the 650,000 emails, now I want to see the text messages. Because I'm going to tell you right now, in my experience, the text messages are always way worse than the emails. Okay? In any investigation I've ever done, the texts are tenfold worse than what you will see in emails.
That's when they really let their guard down. Email, they probably censor the emails. But you know what, Charles, though, man? I think Michael hit it on the head. The real NFL is in these emails. It felt like what we read in the New York Times, it was a window into their soul. And I'm not just talking about their political leanings or their beliefs. I'm talking about how they operate. It was like being a fly on the wall at a good old boy network meeting.
Yeah.
Because the part that was most troubling to me from a league operational standpoint was when Bruce Allen reportedly told Jeff Pasch, hey, I got to hit you back. I'm busy trying to lower a contract for a player. And Jeff Pasch responds, the Lord's work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know what, man? Don't miss me with anything about we're partners or we're in this together with the players. Right. I'll say what I said when this Gruden thing first came out. Here's what they think about you. Okay? And so to me, even though this was not as morally and societally offensive in terms of anti-gay or racist, or sexist or misogynistic language or what have you, from a practical application standpoint, this was just as problematic, just as troubling, because all of it speaks to how business is done in the NFL among a select few power brokers, whether that's coaches giving opportunities or how they deal with players, i.e. John Gruden, or whether that's the league's top lawyer and how he deals with teams and the favoritism he shows to specific teams as opposed to the players who supposedly are partners in this NFL venture.
I defy you to read those exchanges and not, like, in my mind, the Johnny Cash language popped of, riding in fine dining cars, smoking big cigars. Like, this is, to me, behind the scenes, you have the imagery of, let's be honest here, white males in power broker positions who say things publicly, do things publicly, and then immediately hop on the private line to talk about how it's really going to go down. That's how it felt when you read that. It feels like there's one set of information that comes out for public consumption and imagery, and then there's a whole subset of information that occurs privately between these same individuals. And all it does is lean into what a lot of people consider conspiracy theories about who's on strings and what's happening behind the curtain. But now we're seeing it's not a conspiracy theory. Maybe a lot of what happens behind the scenes gets cooked up. And I know it pisses people off when you bring up Colin Kaepernick, but anybody have any doubt that there was more cooked up behind the scenes on that one?
Could you imagine what they said?
That's what's there.
Could you imagine what they said?
I'm telling you.
With the exchange? Oh, my God.
I'm telling you. Well, you said, can you imagine? Can I imagine what they said? I don't have to. If I can just get my hands on those emails, I'll know what they said. Yeah. It's all there. Yeah. I know it's all there. Look, Hey, Jeffrey Pash, and believe me, I told you, I love this stuff. Those emails come out, I'm all in. I'm bought in. I'll do it. Hey, I'm surgical with it. I'm surgical with it, Mike and Charles. I really am. I remember reading all of the Deflategate stuff, and Jeffrey Kessler, who was Tom Brady's Deflategate lawyer, when he went to the appeal, he was able to just in a very small amount of time say, wait a minute. Didn't y'all say the Wells report was independent? Yeah, yeah. Ted Wells, didn't you say that? Yeah. Jeffrey Pash, didn't you say that? Yeah. So who's paying you to be here today? And they had to admit that it's just all so, it's just connection. So Jeffrey Pash incestuous. And the Wells, like there, it's a whole, it's the secret network, man. It's the secret network, Charles.
By the way, every single time anyone ever brings up Deflategate again, I'm just going to see that gif of Ron Swanson bashing his phone with a hammer and think Tom Brady was right. Like, he absolutely was like, I'm not giving you guys anything because you're not going to give us anything. You're not getting any of my private stuff. I'm not giving you any of my records. I'm not giving you my phone to dig through. You're sure not giving us your phone to dig through, right? I mean, look at the links that they're going through right now. And by the way, whoever is leaking this stuff, and I promise you, I have pressed every single, I've gone everywhere and asked every single person that I think could have any idea who is leaking this stuff. And no one knows for sure who it is, but clearly someone has their hands on all of it and is figuring out who do I want to frag? When do I want to frag them? And I'll tell you what.
It's fascinating.
A decade of now that we know, particularly that the lead lawyer was talking to Bruce Allen. I can't imagine who was talking to Dan Snyder. I can't imagine, but and go through your mind, what other coaches ran through that organization? Sean McVay was in the organization, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan. I mean, go through, break down, that 650,000 emails might be the greatest thing that's ever existed in terms of like culling one piece of information and lighting a fire.
No, it's like Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, it's just this lost treasure, a romance in the stone, or a jewel in the Nile or something. Like, somebody got to find this damn thing.
It'll be me and Mike. Like, right. It's like when we're lifting the emails, like they're lifting the Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. So, but look, you and I, thank you for, this is my third time talking to you this week, Charles, because you and I, you had me on, you pod to win the game, your amazing podcast the other night. We had a great conversation. Do you remember when I said that I could not say who, because I didn't see the emails myself, but I knew that this stretched to the league office, and I knew I heard Jeff Pash, that Jeff Pash is going to be ensnared in this situation. Remember I said it on your podcast? So lo and behold, here we are. I'm wondering, and again, same thing. You got to be responsible. You can't just throw somebody's name out there without any actual physical proof. But not just what you're imagining, but through your network of sources, like, are you hearing that something else could be coming out, because we were clamoring for more emails. Now we got Jeff Pash. Are you hearing that some DeMarre Smith is like, I want to know more because this influences practices within the league. What are you hearing that you can kind of, if anything, that you can share with us about how wide and far this tangled web that the NFL weaves may stretch and who may be ensnared in it?
Okay, so Wednesday, 11:30 a.m., looking at a text message conversation with someone who would know. And he said, I hear Jeff Pash is going down. This is Wednesday, 11:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. I said, you think Pash was the leak? I thought that's what he was aiming at, that Jeff Pash was the leak. I said, well, he certainly had access. He said, no, he has some bad texts, I heard. Now, could he be conflating texts with emails? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I mean, it could be emails, could be texts. But in the text that have followed this thing, this individual says, look, this thing goes deep. He suggested last night, he sent me some of the stuff that has gotten out there. He says, this is just starting to fall apart. It's someone who, he's not going to give anything up, but he's adamant that this is just the beginning of this and that it's going to jeopardize the ownership of the Washington Redskins. The Washington football team. Good Lord. I can't believe that just came out of my mouth.
We're old.
Yeah. It's going to keep happening. The Washington football franchise, I think, he believes that the the ownership of Daniel Snyder could potentially once again get called into question if information keeps coming out in this whole situation. And I asked someone, I asked an executive who's been around the block for a long time and I, about the Washington football team investigation. I said, why did it go the way it did with the oral reports and nothing was released and it's been so quiet? And their suggestion to me was, you have a situation where both sides have nukes. Dan Snyder's got nukes on the league. The league's got nukes on Dan Snyder. And they're sitting there staring at each other and going, well, we're going to both destroy each other if we do this. So this is how we're going to have to get through this. There's going to be some, and this is funny because you bring up the whole Bruce Allen BS email about the $15,000 fine. Dan Snyder got fined $10 million. But really what he paid for was $10 million worth of secrecy because nothing was supposed to get out. Write your $10 million check.
Small price.
I would make sure he paid that money now. I would probably double check to make sure that there wasn't a phone call that occurred later or an email that occurred later to make sure that the money got paid. And B, now I understand how maybe that financial amount was come to. Now I can see in my mind how a conversation would happen. Like, okay, here's the deal. You're going to get fined here and we're going to move on. But, you know, just be, this is, you're going to, this is the penalty. This is a speeding ticket you're going to have to pay.
And I know the music's playing. I'm just going to add to what he's saying.
We're going to move to break.
Music's playing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to go to break. Hang around, Charles. I'm just going to say this, though. For those who don't know, the owners had the right to push out Daniel Snyder at the time. They all declined to do it. And now you understand why nobody really stepped forward and said, I want him out. Because a lot of people have secrets. A lot of people got dirt on them.
Exactly. Everybody got secrets. Everybody got secrets. Oh, I know you got secrets. You were smoking weed. You know the funny part? Given their political leanings, is that now, 5 years later, we can say, their emails.
Oh, yeah.
All about it, their email.
That's huge. You know, it's huge to keep the lead in our division. And anytime you can win road games, it's big, you know. And I've always said if you can win your home games and split on the road, you'll be in the playoffs every year.
It's a good win. You know, it's tough to win on the road. And obviously we didn't play our best, so we got to get back to work. We got a, you know, good little break here, use it, and then get back to work, see if we can get better.
Although, who knows what happened last night after that whack-ass Taunton call on Avery. God, I hate Taunton.
That was terrible.
But anyway.
That was terrible. Why did they do that? Just get out the way. Get out the way.
You know? So I was just looking, you know, power rankings, Mike, and I don't pay too much attention to power rankings. And Charles Robinson is back with us. It just was interesting to see just the variety and the diversity when it comes to, you know, everybody's got the Bills in the top one or two. Same with the Cardinals. Then it gets a little more interesting. Yeah. You know, maybe the Buccaneers at three. PFT's got the Ravens at four. You know, SI's got the Chargers at four. Those two teams meet this Sunday. Rams like a top five team. Charles, you and I talk about this on your podcast. Like the NFC, you know, you got the Packers, you got the Cowboys, you got the Rams, you got the Cardinals, you got the Bucks, you know. So I was curious, you know, who you saw right now. The only undefeated team is the Cardinals, who will talk specifically about the move they made in a second. Bills probably have the most impressive win, dare I say, at this season, beating the brakes off the Chiefs in Kansas City. I don't think I'm missing anybody there. I know how much you've talked about the Cowboys and their growth. So broad, very broad question. But I'd like to know simply who you think the best team in the NFL is. And if it's the Bills, who's your best NFC team? Going back to the question you and I talked about the other night.
I do think it's the Bills because I think when you take the number one defense in DVOA, which is the most accurate measure of how successful a unit is, and then you run them into the number one offense in the NFL, the top DVOA offense, which was the Chiefs, and you watch the Bills just annihilate them defensively, push them around, turn Mahomes over, shut out Tyreek Hill, basically. I think Emmanuel Sanders has been a great addition to that offense. I think Josh Allen, I think the health is where it needs to be. I think they have the right role position players. I think they could get themselves even better at the deadline if they really wanted to. I think there are players that could probably still go out and acquire. So I think the Bills are probably the best team in the NFL. When you consider where that defense is, where the quarterback is, and that they have really starring players. In terms of the NFC, you and I talked about it on UPod to win the game. Dallas, I think Dallas, I really like what Dallas has done defensively, the pieces, the guys that are really popping without DeMarcus Lawrence, who's a tremendous leader for that defense, being on the field for them. A lot of young guys contributing, starring Micah Parsons, Trevon Reed, and then offensively they're running the ball. They got two backs who could potentially rush. Well, I mean, you know, as long as they're healthy, could potentially rush for 1,000 yards this season. Skill positions are ridiculous. The tight ends are catching balls. I mean, Dak, by the way, is a top five quarterback right now. Like, it's just we laughed about it on the show. The Cowboys are like living up to the hype finally.
They really are. I'm gonna come back to that Chiefs point in a second, but Michael, same thing to you. I mean, I don't think we've talked about just best team right now. This week, who's your best team? And if it's not an NFC team, who's your best NFC team?
It's the same one. It's the same team as Charles Robinson. I got skills and I won't choke like the Buffalo Bills. No, I mean, look, they are the top team in AFC and in the NFL. I'm convinced of it. Now, the NFC, I don't see, a lot of people don't have a lot of love. As a matter of fact, Yahoo's got my Packers at 5, SI at 8, PFT at 6. I like the Packers and Buccaneers for different reasons. They're two different kinds of teams. But my point is, I don't think either team has played his best football yet. And to your point, Charles, deadline is November 2nd, I think. Trade deadline at 4 p.m. November 2nd, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Jason Light is going to be on the phone. I think they're going to bring in more corners or more people in the secondary. Let's say secondary, versatile secondary pieces. And I think they'll be even better.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go Packers. Well, I'm going to go Packers. So if you have to nail me down, Packers.
Yeah. Well, I agree. It's unanimous. It's the Bills. NFC, I told Charles the other night, so to be consistent, I think the Cowboys are the most impressive right now, given their total package and how close they were to knocking off the Bucks on opening night. Which I know there's no column for close, but nonetheless. But remember, Bucks are my Super Bowl pick, and I think they're going to get better, like you said, Michael, but also all they got to do is get to the playoffs. And if they get there, I'm taking my chances with 12. But what I want to ask you about specifically, Charles, about the Chiefs and what the Bills did to the Chiefs, I'm wondering if, and listen, it's easier said than done, but I'm wondering what you've observed or what you talked to NFL personnel about when it comes to this trend, it seems like. This strategy of just by some of the most aggressive defensive coordinators in the league, whether that's Wink Martindale, whether that's Todd Bowles, we saw it in the Super Bowl and it's continued, and Buffalo did it with Leslie Frazier, of not blitzing, only rushing 4 or 3 as the case may be, but not coming after these quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and playing this, you know, this too high shell, you know, or this cover 5, this man underneath coverage, and making them have to, wait for it, matriculate the ball down the field, fellas, and forcing them into mistakes. Like, this seems like the kryptonite to these quarterbacks. Are you seeing that? Are you hearing that too?
Well, it's go back to, early in the season, the Chiefs, you saw teams kind of flood the zone in the secondary. I mean, they're trying to take, and I really truly believe they're keying on Tyreek Hill. I think teams are sitting there saying, if we remove Tyreek Hill and we're going to basically challenge the Chiefs to run on us, we're going to take some damage via Travis Kelce, but they're going to have to find a third option to these two guys, and they're going to have to show us that they can actually run the football, like committed to it in a way that's going to damage us. And you've seen Patrick Mahomes in some of these games make mistakes of aggressive, like aggression. You know, he's putting balls up in places at times that become turnovers because he's being aggressive, and at times trying to get Tyreek Hill involved in key situations. And I truly do believe that part of resolving this for the Chiefs is, I don't know if it's Marlon Mack, I don't know who it is. I think you have to figure out a running back that can be a very consistent cog in your team, and you can start to hurt teams that way and force them to adjust, because they're gonna come with limited pressure. They're not gonna send 5-6 guys and know that you know they're gonna get popped over the top and expose a safety, or leave somebody on an island who's gonna get chewed up, either a linebacker on Kelce or even a nickel on Kelce, or God forbid a deep safety trying to track down Tyreek Hill. So it'll be interesting to see. You go back to maybe why Todd Bowles probably should. It's too bad that you can't name a coach an MVP, you know, in a Super Bowl, yeah. But that guy probably deserved
it. Give it to the unit. Yeah.
You know, Charles, Mike just said a few minutes ago, hey, if the Buccaneers make the playoffs, he's taking his chances with 12. And isn't it, I'm looking at Brady this year, and I know all the passing numbers are great. He had another interception last night, no big deal. Still way up there with yards, way up there with touchdown passes. Maybe it was just simple, and some people missed it when they're talking about the perceived decline of Tom Brady a few years ago, and then he just bounced back and continued to do what he's doing. It's been years since he had a receiver like Antonio Brown, not even his best receiver in Tampa.
Right.
It's been years since he had somebody like Antonio Brown on his side. Antonio Brown.
He might be his best receiver.
Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. You know, Gronk didn't even play last night. You got Brait. You talk about running backs. You got a couple running backs, including a former top five pick. Is it simple for Brady? Patriots have done it? Hey, so give him what he wants and then just watch him cook?
Well, I think the Patriots did. They tried to bring in Antonio Brown, okay? And that Tom wanted, even after Antonio Brown, they had to get rid of him. Tom tried to get the Patriots to bring him back again, and it just wasn't going to happen, particularly after some of the things Antonio Brown said about Robert Kraft. But I think people have to understand, number one, when they are talking about Antonio Brown, guess who he is now? He's Tom's Julian Edelman. That's who he is. He's Tom's main man. Yeah. Like that is 100% the role that he fills in Tampa Bay. He trusts Antonio Brown. He looks for Antonio Brown. And if Gronk's not going to be in there, it's not because Mike Evans and Chris Godwin aren't sick individuals who can, you know, be all pro level players on any given day. It's just because of that trust factor. And Tom really knows, like, hey, if I get into a pinch, this is the guy I'm going to. It's crazy that the guy he trusts the most might literally be the third most talented wide receiver in that group. And that's what's scary about this. I brought up, Dan Wetzel and I got into this debate about Tom and should the Patriots have kept him. And Dan made a good point to me. He was like, look, man, look at what he's surrounded with there. Was Bill ever going to be able to do that? Were the Patriots ever going to be
that's
able
what Bill said.
To surround him?
Belichick said we weren't the best option for him.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's talking about.
That's true. That's actually true. Like, I remember when Tom was going into that free agency, I talked to Peyton Manning about going through his Denver, you know, like why he chose Denver and everything. And Peyton went through this whole thing, and I talked to Tom Condon too about the laundry list of things that Peyton sat down and was like, here are all the pieces I'm going to look at. Here's everything. I'm going to know that I'm putting myself in the exact right situation. Tom did the same exact thing. And I remember one time Arians talking about Light, and he and Jason Light talking to Tom, and they were like, we didn't ask him anything. He asked us everything. And one of the first things he asked was Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, what kind of guys are they? Like, what kind of people are they? Like, they were expecting, like, you know, football questions or this or that. And Tom's thinking three levels deeper about what it takes to win a championship. And that, and Arians, I remember, trotted this out once, sort of explaining, like, in his mind, he actually knows how to build a champion. He knows who's important in that locker room and whether you can count on him. Now, I know some people are listening to this and they're going, well, what about Antonio Brown? What kind of guy is he? Well, I can tell you this. He's been the quietest guy he's ever been since he's gotten to Tampa Bay with Tom, which is remarkable. And Tom definitely trusts him on the football field.
Yeah. Hey, couple more things I want to hit with you before we let you go. Both of them Eagles related. Charles, we had some fun, and this is Michael's favorite movie because he was in it. We had some fun on your pod to win the game the other night, or maybe it was yesterday when I was yelling at you about fantasy football. We were talking about the not effing around crew, you know, like find me something that looks like a print and make it stick, because this not effing around is about to go both ways, okay? So we're talking about the town. The Cardinals seem to be the not effing around crew. Okay, undefeated, and they lose Max Williams for the season. I love the Zach Ertz pickup. Now, I know he's not the Ertz from a couple of years ago, but it's not like this. It's not like Max Williams or the tight end position was some prominent or priority position, or at least it seemed like, in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. They were cooking with Max Williams kind of coming and going, seemed like. They go out and get a Ertz. I mean, that's a team we didn't talk about when we talked about the NFC teams. Is the lone undefeated team in the NFL right now the Arizona Cardinals. How big a pickup is this for Arizona, that offense?
Well, it's big because when you talk to teams that prepared for the Philadelphia Eagles, they still focused on Zach Ertz like he was a pretty important cog on the field, and they could afford to do that because the surrounding players, you know, there's some good players, especially this year. You know, you bring in the kid from Alabama, Devontae Smith, he's been great. Like, but he's now going to a Cardinals squad. You got to get through three other guys before you even start thinking about Zach Ertz. Like, he's going to be probably the fourth most troublesome offensive piece, at least starting off there. And so I think the plethora of pieces that they have there, he's got a chance to single up, and they can use him probably in more mismatched situations than Philadelphia always could. And by the way, crazy. Like, no offense to like Jalen Hurts or anything, but I mean, like, let's be honest, the kid playing quarterback in Arizona is pretty damn good, and I think he's going to be able to find a big, tall tight end. That'll be a very happy, nice addition for Kyler Murray.
Well, that's actually the last question I have for you. I said two Eagles-related questions, and no offense to Jalen Hurts. I want to talk to you about Jalen Hurts. I think he's accounted, or going into the game, he's accounted for 87% of the Eagles' offense. Nick Sirianni ran the ball, I think, one time in the first half and nine times in the game. And the crowd at the link cheered when they ran the ball on third down. Like, I mean, is how much of it is, and I know it's only 10 starts, how much of this Jalen Hurts experiment is him not being the long-term answer, or the Eagles as an organization still being unsure about whether he's a long-term answer, versus Nick Sirianni is not putting him in positions to succeed yet? Like, what's the vibe you're getting from that organization about how they view Jalen Hurts, and whether he's the guy, or is the head coach not the guy and doesn't know how to call plays yet?
I think they're still figuring out, to be honest with you. Like, I don't think Howie Roseman, the general manager there, is always going to keep his options open. Like, do I think he likes what Jalen Hurts brings to the table? Yeah. Do I think he knows for sure that the coach quarterback pairing is perfect? Well, no, because you don't honestly know for sure if the quarterback is what you think he can be. Like, you're running all this RPO stuff. There needs to be some more R in the RPO and some more R that's not Jalen Hurts. And you look at the running back there, I think you got fans, you know, in Sanders, you got fans cheering because he's ripped off some nice plays. Like, he's had some moments where you're like, maybe they should try running the ball a little more, you know, make it a little more linear offense and actually hand it off a little bit more to this guy and see what can potentially develop here. It's Hurts, I think, is when he was at Alabama, I think there was always the, are we sure he's the guy? He gets beaten out. He goes to Oklahoma. He's fantastic at Oklahoma. But there were always questions about, you know, is his arm good enough, you know, to make window throws in the NFL? Do you have to design an offense that's going to be unconventional, and unconventional offenses can work for a while in the NFL, but eventually defenses adjust to it. Then can the quarterback adjust to the adjustments? That is I always call it the Jared Goff situation. Jared Goff was fantastic, and then defenses caught up to Sean McVay, and Sean McVay is like, okay, now we got to change and we got to do this other thing. And Jared Goff couldn't keep up with that. And Sean McVay is like, I can't have a quarterback who can't change with me. We have to always change. Mm-hmm. Can Hurts do that? Because look, the RPO stuff isn't going to work consistently on the NFL level. It's just not. You can have wrinkles. That's great. But you can't run that all the time. Look at Arizona. You would think coming in, you'd be like, oh, Kyler Murray's going to be, you know, he'd be an RPO quarterback. He's not really an RPO quarterback at all.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, can Hurts do that? Can Hurts do what Kyler Murray can do?
Right. Cool. All right, brother, man. Hey, we appreciate you. Thank you so much. This was fun. Keep whipping up those votes. Okay. You know what I'm talking about.
We'll talk.
What's your record? Mike, what's your record?
Dang, man, that's wrong.
What's your fantasy football record? 0-5.
Dog, I'm 0-5. Lowest score, you know, hey, and the most points allowed is bad.
You know what?
Hey, Mike, like Urban says, though, hey, I'm usually not wrong about these things. There's some wins in there. We're getting better.
Hey,
not showing up, but we're getting better.
I feel like the Urban Meyer.
Lowest scoring and winless team, but fattest t-shirt budget in the league. So,
gotta have something going for me. All right, man. We'll see you next week.
All right, later, guys.
Hey, Mike. Keep an eye on Vita.
Yeah, man. All right.
I mean, that's commitment. Like, you know what? We gonna do this jersey swap, no matter what.
Look at it.
One of the biggest, most powerful men in the league. That was a great moment. I mean, Leonard Fournette's interview, he had a great game last night. I had to take a back seat to watch him. The amount
tough.
Of commitment that Vita Vea was showing to Hell. Try to get his jersey. That's respect, though. You know, listen, once upon a time, I had to take off shoulder pads in a jersey. Wasn't easy, but certainly wasn't that hard for me. A man who once wore a jersey for 10 NFL seasons in the NFL. Former offensive lineman with the Denver Broncos, Ryan Harris, Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl 50. Ryan Harris, also the pride of Notre Dame University. Did I say that right? Is it the University of Notre Dame? I beg your pardon. The University of Notre Dame.
That's right.
Ooh, man.
University. Either way.
I only work at NBC. You know what I mean? So, you know, hey, we'll get to the Irish in a second. But, man, actually, you know what I would love to do, man? Because you mentioned your 10 years in the NFL and your Super Bowl championship with the Denver Broncos. We see the helmet behind you. Well, first of all, you got any cool jerseys? Did y'all do the jersey swap back then? That feels like a more recent thing. Y'all did jersey swaps?
Well, I mean, I'm a financial literacy guy, and they always did the jersey swap. They told us it'd be $300 if we did it. So I was like, you know, but I got some teammates' jerseys. You know, when I played with the Texans, Andre Johnson one time after one season was cleaning out his locker. He's like, anybody want these cleats? About half of the locker room jumped on them and, you know, got some cleat signs. Yeah. So I got a couple great things and some of my jerseys up. But and let me just start by saying it's an honor to be on with you, Mike and Michael, man. Y'all give us something to see and something to be. And they have to respect guys like me when I come into this industry because we could be guys like you. So thanks for your example.
Oh, that's what's up. Wow. Appreciate that, man. Wow, thank you. A lot of respect
that.
For you.
Thank you.
And when you say you are a financial literacy guy, you aren't kidding. You graduated with 2 degrees. In economics and policy and in political science, okay? So you're a living example of do not judge a football player by what he does, because you're much more than a football player. We'll talk about everything you've done since your career ended. But you spent 10 years in the NFL. You know what goes on behind the curtain. You know how the sausage is made. I love it if you could kind of tell us just your reaction to what you've seen this week, the fallout from this investigation into the Washington football team in terms of not only Gruden's emails, but Adam Schefter's emails, and now most recently Jeff Pasch's emails, and just the nature of the league and inner workings, all of this stuff. And just tell us just how you responded to it based on what you saw for 10 years of living that NFL life.
Well, it's incredibly disappointing, you know, I think to anybody who has any moral decency, you know, whatever you believe about the emails, let's be clear about one thing. You know, when a player is a distraction, fans can't wait to say, get rid of that distraction. Well, a coach became a distraction. And one of the biggest sins in football is for a coach to become a distraction to his players. I mean, Urban Meyer says hello, right? I mean, you can't do that. Your job is to get guys ready to play at the highest level. And if you become a distraction, you're taking away from the team. I also think, and maybe I'm naive, but I believe if John Gruden had apologized for all of it and said, hey, listen, you're going to see more emails. I at a time in my life, I believe certain things. I've grown tremendously. I no longer believe these things. I've learned. I've placed myself in the community to learn. I will continue to do that to all the communities that will be affected and insulted. Maybe he still has a job, because a lot of us could say that. I mean, a lot of us have grown some in the last 18 months, but I think a lot of people could have identified with that. I also do think, you know, this is the tough part for us. I believe it's principle four in Dr. Martin Luther King's six laws, six rules of nonviolence. But evildoers are also victims. And we have to recognize that the environment they grow up in creates the evil that they do. And that's something that's been hard for me. But we as a society need to create a space for people like John Gruden to re-enter society and talk about their experience. I mean, just look at what happened with Drew Brees in the kneeling, right? He mentioned, you know, talking to his teammates was such a revelation for him, and he saw things differently. Those conversations go a lot further than conversations that people will have with someone who looks like me. But disappointed, I think he tried to nip it in the bud, and that was a mistake. And we do have to create a space for people to re-enter so we can tell those stories and stay on the same team.
I'm going to tell you, Ryan, you're the first person in the history of the show. Michael Smith knows this. To quote Principle 4 off the dome of MLK. Okay,
I think so it's Principle 4, that, man. Hey, you know.
Hey, we'll, even if it's
we'll
not,
take your word for
you
it.
Close.
Yeah, exactly. We're not gonna hold that against you. Yeah.
you've inspired us to go back and look at all the principles. But you bring up a great point too about John Gruden, because I said when it first happened, I said, Mike, we're taking his word for it. This is before we knew about what he really said. This is on Friday. We're taking his word for the, that this is all it is. And truly, he wasn't telling his team the truth. What's that like? Just give us a sense of what's that like in the locker room, in the meeting rooms. Everybody makes mistakes. We know that. But what's it like when guys know that you haven't been totally transparent with them? Like, how does that work from your experience?
You lose football games. You know, that's really what you do. When you lose trust in a locker room, you're not going to win. You know, we had a huge banner up in the Broncos team meeting room with the year we won the Super Bowl, and it said accountability. And one of the things I love about sports is, you know, I could get upset with you, Michael. Hey, Michael, man, that was horse bleep. You know, let's go pick it up, man. We need more. Let's have that confrontation and then let's move forward. Right. We're still on the same team. But anytime you try and hide things like that, especially as a head coach, I mean, think about this. As a head coach, you're telling guys why they should be on time to the buses. Why they have to be aware in certain situations, why they have to be accountable to their teammates. I mean, coaches ask questions like, you knew this play was coming. Are you stupid or did you not believe that I was telling you the truth? Well, now you got a whole bunch of things where I'm wondering certain things, right? So you lessen the accountability for the entire team. You lose trust and you lose games because why am I going to listen to somebody when I don't know if they're lying or telling the truth? If coach now tells me, hey, Ryan, I believe in you. I want you to be a part of the Raiders long term. How do I believe in him? How do I believe in what he's saying if I can't trust him to respect my teammates and my father and uncles and grandfathers who look like me, you know? And the other issue, too, is how come it took more? How come it took more than what he said to DeMaurice Smith to get this reaction? Yeah. And I think that's something that we really have to look at. You know, okay, you can make fun of one group but not another. I mean, you know, the state of Texas is doing wild and crazy things now with what they're teaching in schools. And all of a sudden, you know, now when somebody else, another group is attacked, now we want to put all the forces of good against such evil. So we got to get better at that as a society, too, of, hey, we have a standard. You have to keep it. They do that every day in the NFL. The championship teams do. And we can do that as well in our lives.
You said they would lose games. If he had stayed there and they lose games. But how about trust for, essentially, this is his assistant. His assistant is taking over. They've got 12 games left. As Mike Mayock pointed out, hey, we're 3-2. Our goals are still in front of us. What, just guessing, or maybe you have some insight, what it's like in that locker room right now after what they've been through the last, you know, several days?
Well, two things happen. Number one, I mean, people forget, for all NFL athletes and all athletes of any sport, you know, when you get to your court, your field, your arena, that's it. Like, right. You can leave the world without you and go to that place. So football is going to be home for the Oakland Raiders this Sunday when they come to Denver and play the Broncos. And one of the things that can do is make them extremely potent and productive. Right. Hey, I don't care what happened. I'm going to take my frustration out on the Denver Broncos. I'm going to take my frustration out on the opponents. Right. But the other thing that happens is you now have a locker room full of mercenaries. Right. I mean, when a new coach comes in, you don't know if you'll be that coach's guy or not. Nobody knows what the outcome of Mike Mayock's going to be. I mean, and if you're the NFLPA, how do you not ask to see the internal emails of the Oakland Raiders or the Las Vegas Raiders now? You know, I mean, are we just supposed to take everybody's word that that kind of language and behavior stopped? So there are a lot of questions that happen. But the mistake the Broncos could make this week would be to think, oh, the Raiders are going to be discombobulated. No, they're looking forward to Sunday because that's where the questions stop. That's where their own questions stop because they've got something and an enemy they can focus on right in front of them. And then they get back to the locker room full of mercenaries that are doing what's best for them, their contract, and their future.
Interesting. John Gruden, we all know, has had Notre Dame ties, as do you, the University of Notre Dame. I'm just curious, and you're a color analyst for Notre Dame broadcast. I'm just curious, is Notre Dame good? 5-1, losing to Cincinnati, no shame in that. Bounce back with the win against Virginia Tech. We got a bye here this week for Notre Dame, followed by a rivalry game against USC. Questions about who the quarterback is. How good, if at all, is Notre Dame?
Well, Notre Dame is an elite team, top 10 team in the nation. I mean, they have a linebacker who's playing now, going into last week, was 15th linebacker in the nation in tackles. It's his first year he started. So they have depth at every place. And, yes, they have questions at quarterbacks, and they also have three good quarterbacks. So they lost because they had three turnovers in their first four drives against Cincinnati at home. You're not going to beat a top 10 team doing that. And that all happened, by the way, you know, early in the game. So they have questions at quarterback. Their offensive line had to replace three starters that went to the NFL because we are O-line you, as everybody knows. You play at Notre Dame on the O-line. You will play in the NFL. It's always funny to me. You know, nobody thinks about the offensive line until there are problems. And then they're like, well, what's going on with the offensive line, right? Everybody's excited about receivers. Yeah. But you got to have experienced guys who are on the same page as it comes to technique. And Notre Dame offensively, you know, has gotten the wins they needed and just unfortunately had too many turnovers in a tough loss to Cincinnati.
But look here, man, speaking of playing on Sundays, ain't no question about that safety. Kyle Hamilton, I watch college football to scout. I'm already thinking about the 2022 draft.
Yeah.
Kyle Hamilton is that dude. You see him all the time. Like, why is he so special in the back end?
We'll start physically. I mean, I think he's listed as 6'4". He is 6'6". I mean, one of the first times I was near him, like, the lights went off near me. You know, I'm standing at the elevator. I turn around, it's just Kyle Hamilton standing there, right? I mean, and I played with Ed Reed. You know, I played with some great safeties in my NFL career. They're not built like Kyle Hamilton. And it's funny because as a freshman, I told a scout that I know who came to the Notre Dame game, I said, hey, they got a freshman, Kyle Hamilton. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick, you know, in a couple of years. They laughed at me. Well, the next year, last year, they came to me and said, Ryan, you lied. He's going to be a top 5 pick. I mean, he covered 35 yards while the ball was in the air at Florida State and made an interception on the sideline. I mean, you don't see that happen. And the good thing for him, he doesn't know how good he is. He's making up for other players' mistakes. But when you put him in a defense with a – you know, say you put him with a Von Miller or a Bosa brother, right, and a linebacker like Queen at Baltimore or something like that. I mean, you're going to have guys where now all you have to do is your job. He's going to be one of the great safeties in the NFL, and it's going to happen for hopefully your favorite team, whoever you are, wherever you're at.
Well,
no doubt.
You know, it's funny, Ryan, Mike mentioned that there's no shame in losing to Cincinnati, and there's not. I just really thought, you know, I grew up in Ohio and remain an Ohio State Buckeyes fan. I just can't believe that it's mid-October and the Cincinnati Bearcats have a higher ranking than the Ohio State Buckeyes. I never thought I would live to see that. Most Bearcats fans are Buckeyes fans, really. They really are. Yeah. They want to see, if they had to pick one, they'd pick the Buckeyes. But you see Cincinnati in the top five. You see a team like Coastal Carolina in the rankings lately. I'm just wondering, this is not the college football that I watched 10 years ago. It's not the college football that you played in. What do you think the biggest difference is where you have some of these programs just kind of rising out of nowhere to be not just competitive, but to be real players?
The transfer rule, 100%. And that's why you're seeing a different game. I mean, you talk about Cincinnati, but their running back, his last name is Ford. I mean, he was an Alabama recruit. He couldn't play because he was playing behind Najee Harris and Josh Jacobs. I mean, that's the guy who decided to go to Cincinnati, right? So it's not like Cincinnati's doing the homegrown talent thing. coaches all across college football are now using that transfer portal in a way that we haven't seen. Florida State had three SEC transfers on their defensive line. Those are different kinds of animals. They're used to big time football. They're used to playing, right? So coaches have gotten very savvy in the transfer portal game, and that has drastically changed college football as we know it, and more changes to come, as next year you're not going to have to sit out a year if you transfer before graduating. So this is only going to get more messy, and but I like it because that forces coaches to be accountable. You know, guys, I got recruited, and my guy who recruited me to Notre Dame, even though I played as a freshman, started as a freshman, he said, "Ryan, we need you. We only got two tackles. We need a tackle." Well, I got there and I was like the seventh tackle on the depth chart, right? The guy lied his face off to me. So it'll keep coaches from lying. It'll keep teams from stacking the deck. And it's going to create more competitiveness across the college football landscape.
Hey, Ryan, we're going to let you go with this, man. Can't help but notice over your left shoulder a copy of your book, Mindset for Mastery, an NFL Champion's Guide to Reaching Your Greatness. Not only did you win a Super Bowl, you achieved the highest of highs, but I understand you endured 9 surgeries over the course of your 10-year career. So you've had quite a bit of adversity that you've endured as well. What's the message in the Mindset for Mastery that you want people to take away?
Choose your mindset, change the world. I mean, there are 1,600 players who are in the NFL this year. 53 will become champions, and it's because they're willing to sacrifice. They're willing to overcome failure. And, you know, we talk about failure less than we talk about sex, yet it's the most constant thread in a success story. So when we won the Super Bowl, everything I believed about myself came true for other people. And I want people to have that moment in their life. And you do that by choosing your mindset. And I did it with the words I am, I can, I will, to just put myself in the place of action, even if I didn't believe it. You know, the night before the Super Bowl, I said, I am terrified that my greatest achievement is going to be my greatest failure if we lose this game. But you know what? I am ready. I'm prepared. I'm excited. I can go out and put on my pads and knock somebody on their ass. I will be a champion. And so in those moments when our good's not good enough, when we face doubt, find what you can do, choose your mindset, and create the life that you want.
That's real talk, man. No wonder you're on the speaker circuit. Notre Dame color analyst, radio host, Masters of the Midday is the show. We appreciate you, man. Let's do this again sometime, bro. You're welcome anytime.
It's an honor to be with you, too. Thank you both.
Ryan Harris.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, bro. Thank you. Hey, as we wrap up this week, I don't know if it's because I came back refreshed from being off last week, which, again, appreciate everybody holding it down. Been a pretty strong week, if I may say. I am my own toughest critic. I am all of our toughest critic. I'm maniacal about this thing, but I think we put together a string of good shows. Let's finish strong with a word from the people, from the man of the people, our social media producer, Brandon Newman, also of the University of Notre Dame. So we got a little Notre Dame Fighting Irish flavor to end the show. All right,
there
Brandon, we will take the risk and wade into the comments section where logic and reason and comprehension are all optional. But as I always say, we love your comments. Because if you're commenting, that means you're watching, kind of listening, or listening completely. But regardless, we appreciate all the support. And a couple of things while I have y'all attention, all right? Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. This man, Brandon, does an incredible job of managing those
accounts.
Great job. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to our podcast. And give us 5 freaking stars, okay, on our podcast. All right, so without further ado, Brandon,
and listen, you got Sirius Channel, Sirius Channel 211, yeah. Sirius Channel 211.
211.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they're listening now or watching on Peacock TV. All right, Peacock, Brandon, YouTube. What are the people talking about? Let me guess, but what are the people talking about this week?
Y'all know what they're talking about. Kyrie Irving. And there's a lot of slander coming our way. This one is from Mr. Ray Ray 5000. Love the name. You can't change hearts and minds with a false narrative. Insults and attacks show more about you than Kyrie. Michael, I know it's hard to understand people who stand on something when you stand for nothing. So I don't know which Michael he was coming at. But would either of you like to say what you stand for to clear up anything in the comment section?
Let me take that one. You're right. Because, I mean, the way we distinguish around here is Michael and Mike. Michael Holly prefers Michael anyway.
I default to Mike. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, we don't know who he's talking about. But let me say this. On behalf of my friend and my partner, one of the most principled people I know, a man of great integrity, who stands for many things that are good, do not come at my boy Michael Holly like that if you're talking about him. Mm. Ain't no way you're talking about me. Because you're listening. You're listening. Because you're listening, but you ain't hearing me. You ain't got nothing but shit between your ears, bitty boo. My record speaks for itself. Ooh. How many fellas have you collared? How many fellas have you collared? I rest my case, okay? But I got more to say on this, though. Because let me... remember I said the other day when Ted Cruz is in the world, when the same shut up and dribble people are your allies in this, right. You got to rethink things. Did y'all see this Marjorie Taylor Greene tweet that was making the rounds with this awesome reply?
Yes.
Marjorie Taylor Greene. We will never acknowledge her, but we're going to do it here. The fascist NBA won't let Kyrie Irving play for refusing a vaccine, but they still let Magic Johnson play with HIV. That's your girl. That's who y'all elected. That's your girl, okay? And then, shout out to Vegas Fan 1970, the reply of the year. Unless Magic Johnson was raw dogging Mo Cheeks in a low post, I think the two analogies are dissimilar. Perfect. Perfect. One more bit of information I want to share. One more bit of information, because this came out today. And Michael, I'll give you a chance to respond to the accusation.
By the way, I think she has it.
Don't stand
I think
for
she
anything.
Got it. I think she got the vaccine. Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think she got
well,
it.
Right. Anyway, go ahead. I have one more thing I wanted to say before you respond, real quick. And we'll present it without comment. This, I know, you know, we're skeptical about actual information, but the CDC shows new CDC data. This is at 1:19 p.m. this crossed on CNN. New CDC data shows that the risk of dying from COVID-19 is 11 times higher for unvaccinated adults than for fully vaccinated adults. Michael Holly, what you got?
I don't believe that information. Where did that information come from? Who's the CDC? Who's the CDC? Why do you believe the CDC? I'm not doing it. Hey, Mr. Ray, I appreciate the comment. That's all I'm going to say. I appreciate it. Thank you. We addressed it. What's next, Brandon? What's next?
Okay.
I'm not getting into Ray Ray in the boom, boom, boom. I ain't talking about the boom, boom, boom.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
So this one is circled around John Gruden. Holly, you said the Las Vegas Raiders don't get it, but Brandon Staley does. This one is from Zapata. They still got a game to play, just like y'all got a job to do. You trying to say Derek Carr's comments were not sincere? This is the problem with journalism and the media. They always get a skewed, but hey, whatever makes headlines, right? SMH. Now, no one
Zapata,
said no one said that Derek Carr.
Nobody
Zapata,
said that.
Zapata. No one said, but I would like to say, I brought it up because I do think that Derek Carr's commentary is a little scapegoaty. It's giving John Gruden a little bit too much ground. I hate the sin. Listen, my grandmother was racist and I loved her for through it. But a head coach that says stuff like this, that's at the top, that's in his boys club, we got to cut it at some point in time. And obviously I know Ryan Harris said we got to make way for people to come back into society. And I agree. But I just thought Derek Carr has a big profile. And I think a lot of people are letting him slide because of what Derek Carr said.
Interesting. Well, a couple of things. One, I'm glad you recognized that neither one of us said. That's what I'm saying about like listening. Like, do y'all listen? Neither one of us said anything about Derek Carr. In fact, I said, hey, Raiders, let Derek Carr do the talking. So I'm glad you said that, number one. Number two, the last person I expected to say, I thought Derek Carr was perfect because he is probably the most conflicted given his relationship with John Gruden. I was not expecting him to eviscerate John Gruden at all. Not at all, because he has a relationship with him as a quarterback that the rest of us don't. So I didn't have a problem with anything Derek Carr said. I didn't hear everything he said. I didn't have a problem with anything he said, Michael Holly.
Me either. He's very, very devout with his faith, very strong with his faith, upfront, unapologetic. And you hear a lot of Christians saying that. And I did address that, though, on day one of the John Gruden, before we knew all the other stuff. Just like, sometimes... Yeah. Yeah, I know we supposed to say that, but I wrestle with it. Okay, I'm not ashamed to say that as a Christian. I wrestle with sometimes, just being so forgiving.
We got a little over a minute left. Last one, Brandon. Let's make this last one fast. My bad. Let's go.
Okay, this was Ben Simmons. This was really coming at Marcus Spears. Yesterday he said that Ben Simmons, you don't really care about playoff performance. You put everything into some how someone plays in the playoffs. So WTF, that could be the dumbest comment I've ever heard. So if LeBron averages 35, 10, and 10 in the regular season, but come playoffs, he went down to 25 and 5, it's not a big deal. Seriously, I can't believe Mike or Mike didn't say, what you say? So that's almost, because obviously Michael Smith, you came at Ben Simmons for his playoff performance, and then Marcus Spears said that, and you didn't, no one really said anything. Right.
Well, okay, listen. I mean, if I listen, man, Michael Holly will tell you. If I spent every minute of the show correcting falsehoods or like trying to like get, I mean, we wouldn't have a conversation. I mean, I can't catch everything. Hey, Jamar and everybody else who watches us, who comments, good or bad, just don't be indifferent. Oh, we love y'all. Thank y'all for watching.
I see you, bro. No, I hear you.